It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you. Yeah, that's what happened last night. And yes, I did stay up for almost all of it. And I feel great this morning. I don't know why, but I do. Maybe because they did win. 108 years has passed since the Cubs won the World Series. And last night, they did not disappoint in terms of, let's just say the game. The Cleveland Indians played fabulously. They didn't give up. I thought the Cubs were going to win way back. You know, they were 6-3 in the lead. They started the game really strong. And then they changed pitchers, and suddenly it seems that things went awry. The Indians caught up, and they were tied. And so finally, around the ninth inning, when the Cubs didn't score at the top, I just kind of gave up. I thought either they're going to lose to the Indians or, you know, they're going to have to go into overtime. And that's just a little too late. But so what happened is they did go into overtime. They had a 17-minute rain delay, and then the Cubs scored and the Indians scored, but the Cubs scored more than they did, so the final score was 8-7. So it really was quite a game. It occurs to me that baseball is kind of long. 9 innings, 10 innings, that's a long game. You know, it must have been a game that was designed by America when Americans had more time. But anyway, great game, and congratulations, Cubbies. And just to put it in perspective, when the Cubs were last champions, Theodore Roosevelt was president. New Mexico, Arizona, Alaska, and Hawaii were not yet states, and the first Ford Model T car was 2 weeks old. So that gives you an idea of how that all went down. Well, yes, we have to get into the serious stuff. There was stuff breaking last night. Some of this I actually told you before, but it hadn't broken yet, but it did last night. And Brett Baer sort of started his news off with much of this. First of all, the Clinton Foundation investigation is far more expansive than anyone has reported. And could I add to that, as my understanding is that it's branching in many different cities. For instance, down in Florida, I'm not sure which city, but because that's where so much comes in and out of Haiti and some of those other places where the Clinton Foundation is involved. But there are investigations all around the country. And field agents have found all kinds of stuff. So it's a serious investigation. They are saying now that an indictment is likely. They're actually using the word likely. The laptops, as I told you at the beginning of this week, I didn't know which ones. I just knew the devices had not been destroyed. And now we know it's the laptops of Clinton aide Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson have not been destroyed, despite the Justice Department ordering the FBI to do that. The agents refused to. So it is turning into a battle royale. Agents have found email believed to have originated on Hillary Clinton's secret server on Anthony Weiner's laptop. They say the email are not duplicates and could potentially be classified in nature. Those laptops, by the way, of Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson are located in the D.C. FBI office right now. They're combing over them. And who knows what's in there? Because we know the president was corresponding with Mrs. Clinton by some other name. We have no idea what those said, and I find it very curious. In fact, I asked someone on the inside yesterday, don't you find it curious that there are no email, at least so far that we know of, mentioning Benghazi? Where are those? The night of Benghazi, where are those exchanges? Why isn't anyone talking in these email about that? Why is that so silent? So I'm sure there's a lot more, but I just think that's they're notably absent. The sources within the FBI have said again that an indictment is likely in the case of pay for play at the Clinton Foundation. And they said sources in the FBI say with 99% accuracy that Hillary Clinton's server has been hacked by at least five foreign intelligence agencies. I heard yesterday that it's more than that, a great deal more than that. All of our major enemies, all the major intelligence agencies across the world, they believe have hacked into Mrs. Clinton's email. So that's why you can't have an unsecured server. They also described the fact that she has put people at risk, you know, friends of ours, people who cooperated with us internationally to give us information. She has put those people's lives at risk. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just so deep and so wicked. And I also would say that Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, of course, were given immunity deals by the Justice Department. But I had it clarified to me yesterday that if it's found that they lied under oath, those immunity deals can be withdrawn. So you can imagine that the Clinton side of this equation is a little nervous this morning. And by the way, some of those emails show that the Clinton campaign coordinated with the State Department so that they could cover those emails. Also, we know that this Peter Kadzik, who is the attorney at Justice tasked with overseeing the next investigation into those Clinton email in the laptops, or no, in the newly discovered Anthony Weiner laptop, is, you know, thicker than thieves, shall we say, with John Podesta. His wife worked in the Clinton White House. He was a donor to Clinton. We are finding out now that it was Kadzik who stopped the punishment of IRS agents like Lois Lerner, like whoever else's name who's come to my mind, but in the IRS who went after conservative organizations. It was the same Kadzik who tipped John Podesta off about this email investigation. It is really, and I have to say, you won't read this either, but I'll tell you this. My understanding is the Secret Service was also involved in helping to cover this. So that's very inside information. So I'm just telling you. Last night, Catherine Herridge, of course, gave her always excellent report. And let's just listen to what Catherine had to say on Fox last night.
I've made a very deliberate effort to make sure that I don't look like I'm meddling in what are supposed to be independent processes.
But in a new interview, President Obama seemed to dismiss FBI Director James Comey's decision to reinitiate the Hillary Clinton email investigation.
People say crazy stuff about her, and when she makes a mistake, an honest mistake, it ends up being blown up as if it's just some crazy thing.
But this is not the first time Mr. Obama has seemed to put his thumb on the scale. In a 2015 interview with 60 Minutes, the president downplayed the discovery of classified emails on Clinton's unsecured personal server she used as Secretary of State.
I can tell you that this is not a situation in which America's national security was endangered.
But the president has a stake in the outcome. As the State Department revealed earlier this year, he corresponded with Clinton using her personal email address.
I can confirm that 18 emails comprised of 8 distinct email chains between former Secretary Clinton and President Obama are being withheld in full.
In her April FBI interview, Clinton aide Huma Abedin told agents that she notified the White House when Clinton changed her email address so the president's high-security BlackBerry would not block the emails. The president used an alias for these communications. As FBI agents sift through a reported 650,000 emails found on a home computer used by Anthony Weiner and Abedin, his estranged wife, the White House dismissed questions the president's emails could be uncovered.
If the public reports are true, nobody knows what's on that computer. And I'm not going to speculate about what may or may not be there.
The discovery of sensitive records on Weiner's computer could create real legal jeopardy for Abedin, who signed the State Department separation agreement, promising to return classified information or face criminal charges. 5 members of Clinton's team received limited immunity agreements. For lawyers Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, the Justice Department swapped access to their computers and in return promised to destroy them. With new confirmation the FBI is pursuing the Clinton Foundation, experts said the deal showed bad judgment.
They've potentially lost the ability to gauge what it is that's on the new computer as opposed to what was on the old computer if they're going to try to show that somebody withheld information from them. It may be impossible to prove.
Well, that was Catherine's report on Fox last night. Boy, this is really, I could, of course, spend the entire show talking to you about this. I will tell you there's a Wall Street Journal article this morning which we'll put on our Facebook page. I try to put key articles for you, and if you just even read those articles, and if you want to go back and remember, you can watch, you can see this show, you can hear this show anytime from the Facebook page or from the podcast, if you want to refer people to what we're talking about. This article is called Secret Recordings Fueled FBI Feud in Clinton Probe. This is fascinating. It kind of piggybacks on my conversation with Andy McCarthy yesterday, where the Justice Department continually tried to stop the FBI. The FBI hierarchy, including James Comey, tried to stop them also. But the agents that were on this knew there was something really bad happening, and they did not back off. In fact, they did not destroy those devices, even though Justice insisted that they do that as part of the deal. They would not destroy the evidence. And this is an act of absolute courage. Ladies and gentlemen, this is career-ending. You know, potentially career-ending for these agents. And they have been relentless. This Wall Street Journal report, again, piggybacks on what Andy told us yesterday about the district office that Mrs. Loretta Lynch came out of, being obstructive and not allowing, putting all these restrictions on agents. And then Justice Department lawyers getting very angry with agents, ordering them to do this and that, and the agents refusing and continuing to work behind the scene. My understanding is that so many people had put resignations into Comey, not publicly, but on his desk. They were stacking up and they were threatening him. They were going to go public. And so I'm telling you, this is a drama that somebody is going to tell someday. There's going to be a book. There's going to be a movie. You can't make this stuff up. And so this is what's happening in this last few days of this campaign. And of course, it's having its effect on the polls. Let me, you can look at the polls other places. Let's just say Trump is, let me again say, this is not about personalities this time. This is not about the individuals. It's even larger than Mrs. Clinton. This is about a struggle for the survival of the republic. It is that deep and that important. So let me just say, well, I think President Obama agrees with me. He was saying yesterday in Florida, if we don't win this election, if we don't win North Carolina, he said it in North Carolina, I hate to put a little pressure on you, but the fate of the republic rests on your shoulders. The fate of the world is teetering. He's right about that, except not in the way that I mean it, because the left has made such incredible gains, and we're going to hear about that in just 20 minutes till the hour. We're going to hear about that. Peter Hassan of the Daily Caller has written an article about the money, the Soros connections, and their plans and how they have succeeded. And you're going to hear that the fate of the republic really does lie. Donald Trump is moving up in the polls everywhere because of that. People are just understanding, I think, that these are dangerous times. By the way, Ted Cruz is out on the campaign trail for Donald Trump and Mike Pence today. He's in Iowa and Michigan. So that's a very interesting development, because I don't think Ted has been out on the road for them yet, as far as I know. So that's new. I want to bring you a couple of other reports. This is amazing, amazing. War on the streets of Paris. Pictures coming out of the Express, UK Express, showing. Let me explain. This is a formerly peaceful neighborhood in Paris. It's I can't pronounce the name. It used to be a popular area with tourists, boasting a lively nightlife scene, bustling with restaurants and bars. But worried residents have revealed how it has become a no-go zone in recent weeks following the establishment of the refugee camp, which has brought squalor and violence. Thousands of migrants, mostly from Sudan, Libya, Afghanistan, Eritrea, have pitched their tents under the metro station. French police have tried and failed on many occasions to clear, but asylum seekers simply keep returning and reestablishing. There are now 2,500 migrants pitching up in the makeshift camp. Faisal, a shopkeeper, told the French daily Le Figaro that Stalingrad locals are living in fear, threatening the future of his business. The stench of urine, feces, rubbish has made Stalingrad a terrible place. So the place is dead. No one wants to come anymore. And then they go on. They're stealing. They're attacking the residents. That's France. And a report this morning is that if Mrs. Clinton, under her presidency, the Muslim population in America would exceed France's by the year 2024. We know that she wants to increase the immigration of Muslims from around the world, unvetted. We know that they're not Christian. That came out just a few days ago. It's only a small percentage that are Christian that they're allowing from the Middle East. This is a crisis, and really the future of the republic is at stake. Sandy Rios, I'll return in just a second. Hang on.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held. the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Truth Be Told with Nate Kellum, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
In their never-ending quest to eradicate religion from society, the notorious Freedom From Religion Foundation is demanding that a Wisconsin county refrain from partnering with a Catholic charity to provide human services to the homeless. Without citing any legal precedent, the foundation claims that the Constitution requires the county to only provide relief through secular, that is, atheist, organizations. But they are wrong. Far from requiring the government to favor atheism over other religions, the Establishment Clause forbids it. Governments are free to enlist the aid of religious organizations to meet the needs of the public, especially when caring for the poor. The atheist group's anti-religious theory finds no home in the Constitution.
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Donald Trump has won yet another round of mock elections. High school students in Minnesota, some 77,000, voted for Trump over Hillary Clinton. Last week, Trump won mock elections in Alabama and Maine, not to mention two national elections conducted by scholastic groups. So what's going on here? Why are young people, teenagers, backing Donald Trump? Well, it could be that's who their parents are voting for, or maybe it's because these kids are victims of President Obama's hope and change, and they want to change back. Or it might be they just see their older siblings graduating from college, struggling to find a job, and moving back home. But if you believe the newspapers, Donald Trump does not have that much support among young people, especially millennials. Well, as they say, you can't believe everything you read in the papers. That's why you should listen to the radio. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
That's why I proposed a contract with the American voter. It's a set of promises for what I'll do in my first 100 days. It includes getting rid of immediately Obamacare, which is a disaster. Even Bill Clinton admitted Obamacare is the craziest thing in the world. Quote, craziest thing in the world, where people wind up with their premiums doubled.
All right, that was Donald Trump on the stump. Of course, he's been hitting it heavy because open enrollment has begun with Obamacare. People are getting notices about the increases, and they are staggering. In Arizona alone, premiums are going up over 100%. And so it just made me think about, again, to reflect how we got into this mess. And I was remembering a particular night. When a particular man, who I've mentioned already in this show, stood on the Senate floor, it was the last final effort to stop Obamacare. It was the last night it was possible. And he stood on the floor of the Senate for 22 hours begging the Senate to stop Obamacare. And this is what it sounded like. Senator Ted Cruz.
Madam President, I rise today in opposition to Obamacare. I rise today in an effort to speak for 26 million Texans and for 300 million Americans. All across this country, Americans are suffering because of Obamacare. Obamacare isn't working. And yet, fundamentally, there are politicians in this body who are not listening to the people. They're not listening to the concerns of their constituents. They're not listening to the jobs lost, to the people forced into part-time work, to the people losing their health insurance, to the people who are struggling. A great many Texans, a great many Americans feel that they don't have a voice. And so I hope to play some very small part in helping provide that voice for them. Madam President, I intend to speak in opposition to Obamacare. I intend to speak in support of defunding Obamacare until I am no longer able to stand, to do everything that I can to help Americans stand together and recognize this grand experiment 3.5 years ago is quite simply not working.
All right, I'm going to interrupt you because I want to introduce our guest, and I bet it takes him back in time, too. Daniel Horowitz is a senior editor for Conservative Review, one of my favorites. Daniel, does that bring back some memories?
Hey, great to be with you, Sandy. To quote Chris Matthews, I was getting tingles up my legs remembering that. I'm telling you, could you imagine if you multiplied Ted Cruz times 54 senators, times 230 House members? If you had an entire party singing on the same tune with as much passion, as much vigor, as much knowledge about the harmful effects of Obamacare going on every Sunday show, every nightly cable show, we would have a different country. But the problem we have with the Republican Party is we have 2-3 guys throwing spitballs in the back, everyone laughing at them. You have 90% of the Republican Party trashing them. So, of course, that the budget showdown a couple years ago didn't work. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. This is where we stand. You know, as I noted in my piece about my personal insurance problem, my premiums tripled. This is the type of issue that if you had a Republican Party that was united and dedicated to staying on message, you could permanently decimate the Democrat Party on this, because this is something that is terminal. It's not going away. And thanks to the Tea Party, I think this is one of the triumphs of the Tea Party a lot of people forget. Even though we didn't succeed in getting Republicans to do anything about it, but we kept up the pressure for years and didn't let go of it. So when people get the letters in the mail, Democrats originally, when they passed this bill, they were hoping that, as is usually the case, people would blame the private sector. Man, these insurance companies and not that they're not culpable because they helped pass Obamacare, but no. They pin the tail on the donkey. Everyone knows that this is Obamacare. This is Obama, it's the Democrats. And there's the opportunity. Even if Hillary wins, she'll be extremely weakened, extremely disliked, no mandate, and a real Republican Party could actually win even with Hillary as president. We could win on this issue.
Yeah, I agree with you, Daniel. And I want to get into your personal story because it's Exhibit A of what people in the real world are experiencing with their insurance. But I want to make it clear that the Democrats who pushed this through knew exactly what they were doing. Remember that the chief architect said that we could pass it, they'd be able to get away with it because Americans are so stupid. We caught him on tape, undercover tape, saying that. And also we have to point out, as you'd hinted at, but I will say, Ted Cruz, filibustered that night. He tried over and over and over again. He and Mike Lee and others, Rand Paul, to stop Obamacare. But Ted was really the leader on this. And for that, Mitch McConnell and the other Republican leadership, whatever regard they might have had for him turned to hatred. And he became an object of hatred. Now, let me just say, the Republicans also knew what was coming. What you are seeing in your mailbox now, they knew about that, and they didn't care. It was Ted Cruz who stood up and tried to stop this. And I want to just mark that moment in time and have people understand they knew what was coming. They pretended like they were doing something, but they did nothing. So, Daniel, your article is called Families Struggling with Socialism. Obamacare tripled my cost for much less coverage. We'll put that on our Facebook page because I want people to be able to read it. But tell us what happened to you and your wife and your three little girls.
Well, three little boys. There's a lot more in bugs.
Oh, I thought it was girls. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was. Oh, how did I get that wrong?
Sometimes I wish I had girls. But no, I mean, this has been devastating. I wanted to lay out to people a case study just to show exactly, and I'm sure many people have seen it themselves. I have an infographic there demonstrating what we used to have, how it served our needs. And that was even with, you know, look, conservatives didn't like pre-Obamacare health care, too many interventions, mandates, not enough market forces. But the little forces you had, we were able to go out and pick something that worked for us more or less. And we had what we thought at the time, a high deductible plan, $5,000 deductible. But the interesting thing is it actually covered generic drugs and regular sick visits to PCP, $40 copay for a specialist. This was before the deductible. So it covered all our needs, and the premium was just about $4,000 a year. And it worked. Right now, our premiums have gone up to $15,000 a year. That's $1,300 a month. It's almost as much as a mortgage payment. Just this year's increase alone, the letter we got in the mail, is $470 increase. That is more than I pay on our family minivan, the Toyota Sienna, our monthly payment for that. I mean, let me put it this way. People are now paying more for insurance than the cost of what they are insuring against or what they were formerly insuring against. Normally, you would pay $4,000 or $5,000 so you don't have to pay $25,000, $30,000. But between the $15,000 premium and the $13,000 deductible, you would need to go through $28,000 before a cent is covered of anything.
Yeah, so but you made that very clear, Daniel, but let me repeat. You're paying $1,300 a month now premium, which is just staggering, really, for a middle-class family. It really is. And that doesn't cover anything. It covers that one year a month, I mean, one visit a month, something, well, you know, like a physical every year. And that's it. And otherwise, you have to pay everything out of pocket until you have spent $13,100. So in other words, you likely will never, that all of everything, all of your care, your kids when they get sick, your wife, her pregnant, all of that will come out of your pocket.
Oh, that is exactly the point. My wife was just telling me last night, oh my gosh, imagine if you have a baby. There's nowhere to run or hide. See, typically you'd figure, look, between premiums and out-of-pocket, you're going to have a certain amount. You could divide it one way or another, have a better plan, higher premium, less out of the pocket, lower premium. Here you have no choice. The high deductible nothingness plan is more expensive than the Cadillac plan premium of yesteryear. I mean,
okay.
There's nowhere to run. There are no choices. This is what happens with socialism. There's nowhere to run or hide from it.
Daniel, and if you, just to revisit another subject, if you decided, I don't think it's worth having insurance. I think I'm just not going to participate. You don't have that option either, do you?
No, that's the thing. They trapped you. I mean, this is obviously the unconstitutional mandate. Force people to engage in commerce, force people, or put another way, regulate in inactivity. And there's John Roberts for you on the Supreme Court. For those who think that it's deadlocked 4-4, no, it's not. It's 5-3 or 6-2 liberal majority on many issues or most issues. But that's where we are now. And the point of my article was there is with every day of darkness, there's always a glimmer of hope. And the glimmer of hope here is that people actually see it. Typically, liberals have gotten away with socialism because the liabilities are often unapparent. They're spread out over a long period of time. And people don't realize where the problems came from. And then Democrats parachute in, like the arsonist being the firefighter, and saying, hey, you need help. You're feeling the pain. We're going to give you a subsidy. Here, they know exactly where this came from. This is a teachable moment if we actually had a party that was committed to it. The problem is the Republican Party, they like complaining about it. They want to use it as an electoral issue because it certainly works well. They have no intention of doing what it takes. And what I want to tell people is, you think your vote on Tuesday is very important. And I'm not here to tell you it's not. But what's more important is your vote afterwards. The die is not cast based on who wins an election. When you have nowadays with social media and the ability to harness public opinion on something, when you have something this devastating that affects everyone, because now it's affecting people in the employer-based market as well, we could shut this down. If you, like I said, if you had Ted Cruz times 55 in the Senate, you would shut this down. Democrats would be forced to come to the table, you know, even with Hillary as president. This is where the fight is. It's not just will Republicans win this election. It's will we actually change this party.
Daniel, let me just say, we only have about 4 minutes here. Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell said, I know you've heard this, but hey, Obamacare is a success. 20 million people have health insurance who didn't have it before the law was passed. Your response to that?
Well, first of all, when they say didn't have it in the past, that's misleading. It's not a matter of people that weren't insured. It's a matter of people who signed up. Well, guess who signed up? I signed up, too. I had insurance before. It got canceled, so I had to sign up. I mean, that's the joke. It's like I'll burn down your house and then give you a shed and say, hey, look how many people have sheds now. So, a lot of people have insurance now that is completely unsustainable, unaffordable, and, you know, certainly they come with the subsidies with the other hand to the people that are making below a certain wage, but that's going to run out very soon, or it won't keep pace with the increases. This is the original sin of healthcare, of health insurance, to focus on expanding coverage rather than reducing costs. What you got to do is isolate and minimize the problem first. You have what we really need to do is have, you know, tear down the Berlin Wall. Tear down.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Tear down this Obamacare. I'm with you on
that. We need to allow anyone, any company to offer any plan under any circumstances. You will have, and then we should really get rid of the, you know, government subsidization of employer base so everyone's in the same thing. Pure free market. It's not a utopia. It's not going to be free, but, you know, for a couple $1,000s a year, most families will get it. For the few people that are having difficulties, it will be so minimized. You'll be able to, you could even write people a check to go out and buy insurance and have one government program, you know, replace those. There's so many good ideas, but you need a political vehicle that is actually committed to it.
Yeah, so that's why we have to pay attention to who it is we're electing. And I think one of my biggest disappointments, you and I've had this conversation more than once, Daniel, is what people have not paid attention to the down ballot races in the primary. They were asleep at the wheel. They're sending some of the worst types back into the Senate, back into the House, because I here they're all stirred up about wanting change and want some sort of a change agent in the presidency. And I'm all for that. I'm all for that. But they didn't pay any attention to the down ballot races. So we have a pretty much, well, we'll see what happens. We may have more Democrats than Republicans come Wednesday, but we'll find out. But we need to pay attention to what they stand for and take back our country and take back responsibility. Daniel, I'm more optimistic than you. I sort of think that if Donald Trump wins, he will motivate. He will publicly humiliate Republicans that don't actively seek to turn this back. That's my personal opinion about it. At least I hope so. We also have to point out it's not just the economic. There are real people who have cancer, people who have illnesses who cannot afford what they're having to bear, and their insurance is not covering it. Their deductible is killing them. The premiums are killing them. There are real lives at stake here. It's even more than the economic burden. Daniel Horowitz, thank you so much. As always, we'll put your article on our Facebook page so people can read more of the detail and share it with others. Daniel, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. God bless.
Okay, thanks. Same to you. We'll talk to you soon. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about the corruption of the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton operation from very big donors, also just the left in general, how they've been laying plans for the demise of this country and the overtake of it for a very long time. So don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Hi, this is Tom Wallace of Fortress of Faith. I want to invite you to catch our show each Saturday at 12 noon Central Time. I was a foreign missionary, and my partner, Sharam, was a former Muslim who is now a Christian pastor. Together, we have many years of experience and research in the religion of Islam. Fortress of Faith exposes the evil of this ideology that is masquerading as a religion. For more information, go to fortressoffaith.com. That's fortressoffaith.com.
Take a stand for your Christian faith this Christmas season by wearing and sharing AFA's new Keep Christ in Christmas wristbands. Get one free when you stop by afa.net/Christmas. The wristbands come in packs of 10, so order several to give to your friends. Remember, when you request your free wristband and order more, you're keeping the American Family Association in the battle to restore Christian values in America. Visit afa.net/Christmas.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. One of the things that's so concerning to us as American citizens is when we hear that our highly regarded voting system, established so long ago, is showing signs of being tampered with. It concerns us when we hear that our justice system isn't just and could serve as a weapon against those of us with a Christian conscience. When God wants to judge a nation, He gives them wicked rulers. That was true nearly 500 years ago when John Calvin stated it, and it is certainly true today. As we've spoken before on this broadcast of the plight and blight of our nation and our churches, we know we're deserving of the judgment of God. Our trust isn't in presidents or judges, but in our sovereign God who calls His people to repent. We at American Decency join with others who are urging God's people to cry out to the Lord in repentance of our sins as a nation, as His church, and as individuals. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 4 years ago, then-Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and 4 other legislators requested an investigation of whether a top Hillary Clinton aide was helping align State Department policies with the objectives of the Muslim Brotherhood. The lawmakers cited evidence that Huma Abedi had long-standing family ties to those Islamic supremacists. No inquiry was conducted after Republican John McCain denounced Ms. Bachmann in the U.S. Senate. Worse yet, the resulting destruction of her political career discouraged others in Congress from rooting out Islamist influence operations in Washington. Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta's emails indicate her team got Senator McCain to attack Ms. Bachmann. But for that cynical bipartisan effort to shoot the messenger and protect Huma Abedin, some of the myriad national security and legal disasters in which Huma has lately been implicated might have come to light years ago and perhaps been prevented. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I just hearing Frank talk just then reminded me to tell you that he is going to be in Massachusetts, I believe, tomorrow, in the next few days. With Michelle Bachmann and General Jerry Boykin, and they're going to be speaking, and it is causing an incredible uproar. In fact, the Islamic Society of Boston has gotten involved, and there are threats, and there are threats of protests, and you can imagine. And so I'm telling you that to just bring to your mind that there are real consequences for those of us that are speaking out, dangerous consequences. And I'm asking you to pray for Frank, for Congresswoman Bachmann and Lieutenant General Boykin for their safety. as they go up there and bravely present in the middle of, by the way, the Islamic Society of Boston is, I believe, where the two Zaniyev brothers went. It's a radical hotbed in Boston. And so the worst of the worst, you know, will be stirred into a frenzy. And you never know what's going to happen. So I just ask that you pray for Frank and for Congresswoman Bachman and for Lieutenant General Boykin. And we'll look to get maybe a report from them when they come back. So there you go. All right. Well, you know, the corruption is running so deep. Ed Henry last night reported just more of the pay to play. And I just want you to hear this one short clip, and then I'm going to introduce our guest. Here's Ed Henry last night on Fox News.
A top Justice Department official involved with overseeing the investigation of Huma Abedin is a bigger pen pal with John Podesta than first known. A new email raises conflict of interest questions because it shows Peter Kadzik gave Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman a heads up about her email problem in May 2015. Quote, oversight hearing today where the head of our civil division will testify, likely to get questions on State Department emails, Kadzik wrote Podesta. Another filing in the FOIA case went in last night or will go in this AM. That indicates it will be a while, 2016, before the State Department posts the emails. The tip about Clinton's email production to the public slowing down was sent from Kadzik's Gmail instead of his Justice Department account, which would have been a public record. Now out because of WikiLeaks, which earlier revealed Podesta praising Kadzik, a college buddy, for representing him in Kenneth Starr's probe, writing in 2008, "Fantastic lawyer, kept me out of jail."
That's the first part of his report. And of course, we spent a good portion of the first segment talking about this, but I wanted you to be reminded how deeply this corruption goes. And we have talked time and time again about the connection of George Soros and these major funders to all of these leftist causes. But I don't think there's any way we could comprehend the grand design. And so I've asked the next guest, Peter Hassan, who is with the Daily Caller. He's a writer, and he's done research on this. It's a plan to pull in these major mega donors to implement this grand, my words, undermining of the system. And so Peter's written about this, and I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Peter. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Peter, how did you even get started on this? Why? What caused you to look into this particular aspect of all this mess?
Well, so it actually started out with the WikiLeaks, and, you know, I was going through just the documents in there, pouring over them, and as I came across with this, I don't know, that was from John Podesta, to all of these liberal donors, so like George Soros, Arian Sandler, like all of like the big dollar donors, and it basically just laid out the long-term strategy for dominating politics, and what it focused on was controlling public opinion and then changing the demographics, and you know, I think it's so far, I think they've been doing a pretty good job.
Let me just read part of your article here, Peter. A leaked memo from current Clinton campaign chair John Podesta. Again, he is a busy man, isn't he? He's a very busy man. To a handful of liberal billionaires in late 2007, lays out a long-term progressive strategy to dominate American politics by creating an echo chamber to control public disclosure and change American demographics to make them more advantageous. So let's talk about those different points, Peter. First of all, you mentioned a few of them. It's George Soros, who I've mentioned almost every day. Peter Lewis, Steve Bing. Is that Bing, like as in Google Bing?
Yeah.
Okay. I see. I don't know the Peter Lewis. What is his? I don't expect you to know this, but I don't. Peter Lewis? How is he a billionaire? Do you know what he's connected to?
Off the top of my head, it's all they're all part of the same his big dollar, but this.
Yeah, the leftists. Okay, billionaire donors. Okay, all right. So Podesta's going to meet with them in New York, but they lay out kind of a script before they do that. And they say, this is an independent effort to change course in this country. You know, they know what they're doing. It's just that we're just now figuring, well, in this much detail. Many of us knew there was an effort underfoot. We know it because we recognize it. It's like out of the playbook of the 60s, the infiltration and the undermining. And many people that have worked in the Soviet era recognize it because they fought it when the communists were trying to subvert what was happening in the country. It's the same but different. And so, Peter, when they say create a strong echo chamber, what are they talking about?
Yeah, so what they're talking about there is essentially just with the media, with blogosphere, with talking heads, just creating like an echo chamber in that they have everyone just recycling the same talking points over and over and over again. And so that for like the average person, all they hear is the same points over and over again. And it's the points that George Soros, that John Podesta want people to be hearing. And it's not true by any means, but that's what they want people to be hearing over and over again is these progressive talking points.
It's like little sound bites.
The media
like,
plays a large role in it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I guess so. And Hollywood and people, so people turn on their news mm-hmm. and they hear the same thing as they flip the dials. They hear the same thing, and they have meetings every morning and they issue these like marching orders, and it creates this echo chamber. All the writers write about it. We've already read, you know, Peter. We've already seen that in these WikiLeaks that Podesta was meeting with unbelievable numbers of writers, of television personalities and producers, having dinner for them, cooking for them in his home, strategizing. They're working together, and that's why they sing off the same play sheet. And so the big enter the billionaires to fund all of this, and that is the echo chamber. And they create these pithy little sound bites, and that's what I can tell you from, you know, people that I know that don't pay much attention to the news. They know the sound bites. You know, during the Bush era, it was Bush lied, people died. That was one of theirs. They're always cute, little cutesy things, and not true, but people don't have enough knowledge and don't care enough to be engaged enough to know the difference. I want to read one of your paragraphs here under this strong echo chamber, if I might. This is from your article. Mm-hmm. Now that this enhanced infrastructure is in place, this is the quote from their article, their WikiLeaks leak. Now that this enhanced infrastructure is in place, grassroots organizing, multi-issue advocacy groups, think tanks, youth outreach, faith communities, micro-targeting outfits, the netroots and blogosphere, we need to better utilize these networks to drive the content of politics through a strong echo chamber and measure and message delivery system. Okay, enough about that. Voter registration efforts. What did you find out about that?
So what I found out about voter registration efforts is that the left views these just as a tool to get progressive voters to the polls. And it is in their own words. They have said quote-unquote nonpartisan. Voter registration can be highly effective in delivering progressive voters to the polls. And that's just straight out of the memo. And so it goes kind of into the whole larger scheme of things, and that you get all these people in echo chambers and make sure that they'll vote the way you want them to vote, and then you get your nonprofit advocacy organization that says, hey, well, I just want to make sure you are going to vote, and everybody knows which way these people are going to vote.
Yeah. And they particularly target minority communities. We're going to run out of time, so let's get to the demographics because I think that's really a key mm-hmm. point. What did you find out about securing advantageous demographics?
Yeah, so that really is one of the long-term strategies for progressives is to secure advantageous demographics, which to them means Latinos, everyone but white males for the large part. And that's essentially, and so when I say, you know, secure advantageous demographics, which is a long-term goal of theirs, what they mean is basically change the makeup of the country so that they have more people who are going to vote.
And that means Democrat. That means more illegal, more immigration, legal or illegal. It means, and there is
absolutely
a strategy. They refer to African Americans as their most reliable bloc, and they're also targeting millennials. Peter, before we run out of time, are you a millennial?
Yes, I am.
I'm curious to know what this research has done to your own view. I mean, I don't know what your background is or what you thought before you started doing this, but how has it changed your perception of America? And are they reaching millennials, you think?
It definitely gives me pause about how independent people my age are able to think, not particularly hopeful on that front.
Well, do you think this is that your own? Okay, you know, millennials are hit pretty hard about their lack of critical thinking skills because they haven't been taught to think. But don't you think people can come around and learn to think? I mean, it sounds to me like you've learned to think.
Yeah. You know, I've had a great education and whatnot. And I think, you know, a lot of it is just progressives' goals are oftentimes, you know, framed in emotional packages. They take the immigration debate, and they find, you know, one person with a sad story, and they say, "Here's this emotional story. Now you have to support open borders or amnesty," and that really is a way that they've been very effective, I think, at targeting young voters is making the emotional appeal rather than rational one.
Yes, and because kids have not been taught to debate in school, because they can't, you know, they have to have safe spaces if there are opinions expressed that are contrary to their views, they just don't even know how to engage. And I see evidence of them just shutting down, getting so angry and so beside themselves because they can't handle just thinking through and having a decent argument or a decent disagreement about these basic things, which would bring them to a broader understanding. You know, I always say, Peter, if you can't defend your position, it's not worth holding. And that's what we have to teach our kids to do. I'm grateful to you for writing for the Daily Caller. And we're going to put this piece on our Facebook page. It's called Revealed, Liberal Money's Long-Term Strategy to Control Public Opinion and Secure Advantageous Demographics. It reminds me of what was called the Colorado Model, which turned Colorado blue way back in 2008. It's a pretty amazing story, too. They have a long-term strategy. They're very good at it, and they are succeeding, except we'll see. Peter Hassan, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right. All right, well, listen, we've given you a lot to think about this morning. There are lots of more pieces. Be sure that you look at that Huma Abedin video that we posted a couple of days ago. Who is Huma Abedin? She's connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. She is an infiltrator. These are dangerous times. And this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.